And the weather today, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry and breezy with a few warm, sunny spells.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
Is very present in our society today, but there still appears to be a tech gender gap, with 37% of women saying they wouldn't apply for a role in technology if they didn't think their degree was relevant. And so we're looking at National Coding Week to encourage adults to be part of the technological revolution and close the skills gap. And to address this, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Charlotte Faraday. Good morning, Dr. Charlotte.
Good morning.
And Jordan Poulton. Good morning, Jordan.
Hi.
Charlotte, if we can come to you first in terms of your own pathway and going into technology, what was it that appeals to your good self and actually said, yes, I'm going to take that line and technology is fun?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I totally randomly came into technology as a career. If you told me, you know, a few years ago this is what I'd be doing, I think I would have laughed. I actually started out doing academia, and then the last role I was in was working at a social enterprise that works to get more women into technology, Code First Girls. And so I really ended up joining technology and retraining because of all of the learning opportunities that were available. And I also just saw through working with the volunteers at Code First Girls that there's a huge opportunity here. You know, just to mention that on average roles in tech pay around 36% more, and that there's many jobs that just aren't being filled.
And are you the sole representative of our X or Y XX chromosome sort of occurring species there, or is it a case of there are lots of blokes around you? What's your own experience been?
Well, certainly I think it's fair to say that on large the tech industry is male dominated, but I think what's been really exciting that I've seen through the community work is that many more companies are actually getting on board to try and change things. So I'm lucky enough to work at a software consultancy called ThoughtWorks, who actually gave me the Women in Tech scholarship to join Makers Academy. And there's around 40% of women in the role. So I have quite a good gender split. But that's certainly not true of most other companies.
I mean, Jordan, returning to yourself, I mean, National Coding Week, encouraging adults to be part of the technology revolution. Is it a case of we need to be more positive, discriminatory towards women in terms of actually saying, look, we need more women involved with this?
That is one part of the solution, I think. I think the first thing to point out is that there are lots and lots of intersectional issues, and if we could boil it down into one, then we could just solve that and we could be done with it. But firstly, I think that we need to start paying women fairly, especially when they're doing the same job as a man. As you said, I think we can be much better in actively recruiting, not just for women, but also all underrepresented communities, black people, all people of colour, people with various sexual orientations, and all that sort of stuff. We all have unconscious biases, so we naturally gravitate towards people that look like us. We all need to be aware of that when we're doing going through hiring and interviews and all those sorts of things. We know, for example, that if you list lots and lots of skills in your job descriptions, then you're likely to get less women applying than men, because once men have around 60% of the boxes ticked, they'll apply, but women tend to not apply unless they've got around 90% plus of those boxes ticked. And largely, I think it's a culture thing. We need to make sure that all underrepresented groups know that they're very welcome in these industries, and that we are supportive, and that they'll have mentors, and we'll find mentors, people that look like them and understand where they're coming from. And, you know, it goes down to stuff as simple as making sure you've got good maternity leave and good paternity leave and everything like that. It's so intersectional.
Mm. Back in the 1960s, Gene Roddenberry put together a series called Star Trek, in which he was looking for 50% male, 50% female, and the network said that's never going to occur from that point of view. Charlotte, do you think it's often a case of, well, we need inspiration? Because, I mean, that was all one good, that was half a century ago. In terms of the 21st century, we're still having this issue. I mean, the issues that Jordan's just raised there in terms of you know, pays not being equal, various other factors, and indeed where women sort of feel, actually, tech is for me. It's not just the likes of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and other sort of tech wizards.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a big part of it is seeing, to having that exposure and seeing people who look like you in the industry that you could relate to. And I think another thing, just building on what Jordan said, was around, you know, we make decisions so early on at school around what we're going to do for our careers. So, for example, I was always good at arts. I ended up going down that route. And so I didn't even consider what opportunities were available within technology until much later on. So I just also think very early exposure as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one really important thing that we really focus on is trying to show people that the stereotypes of the tech industry are massively outdated. If you're a coder, it is collaborative. It is creative. You spend a lot of time talking to people. You spend a lot of time coming up with fun ideas. And it's not what you imagine to be middle-aged men surrounded with pizza and cats in a room with their neck beards and the blinds closed. It's young and trendy and hip, and it's a lot of fun these days.
Yeah, and you don't have to be good at maths.
You definitely don't.
It probably would help, but it's really more around problem solving and being creative, yeah.
Talk to us a bit about Makers Academy, this 12-week computer programming web boot camp that people might sort of think, that's worthwhile considering.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people on the surface, it seems a little too good to be true. We are a web developer boot camp. We take people from no knowledge of web development to a job as a developer in a matter of months. The actual course is 12 very intensive, immersive weeks, and we actually act as a recruitment company as well. So we charge companies for hiring our students, and what that means is that we get paid when you get what you want, which is a job.
And Charlotte, any regrets about leaving the ivory towers of higher education to actually work in the wonderful world of technical industries and technology?
Not at all. I'm really, really delighted to have made the switch. And actually, funnily enough, I looked at Makers Academy about 3 years ago and discounted myself, precisely because I just thought it was totally bonkers. You know, I came from the wrong back. I thought I was the wrong person for the industry. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, since having been at Makers Academy, it's accelerated my learning. In the last 3 months, what I've learnt has just totally, you know, got me straight into the industry, compared to, you know, working part-time around a full-time job learning. So not at all. So, very happy.
Jordan, then, to wrap up, where can people actually go to find out more details about Makers Academy?
It's super simple. It's just makersacademy.com. We've got lots of information on the site. If anybody is interested, if we've tickled their fancy, we've got a little ebook that you can sign up for on the website. You can learn the basics of coding in just 15 minutes.
You know, that sounds like a sort of challenge we should actually put some of our students here at the University of Lincoln through, and we must sort of open that up for them in times to come. For the moment, though, Jordan Poulton and Dr. Charlotte Faraday, many thanks indeed. Have a great day now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
I've seen you twice in a short time. Only a week since we started. It seems to me, for every time, I'm getting more open hearted. I was an impossible case. No one ever could. You feel it.
There you have it, as voted for by the great British public, ABBA number one in the list of music artists or bands who we'd like to see make a comeback. Second was Oasis, third of course Pink Floyd. Now to address this whole thing about good comebacks, more challenging comebacks, different comebacks of all manner of things, we're delighted to welcome the awesomely talented Kevin O'Sullivan, TV critic extraordinaire. How are you, Kevin?
Thank you very much. Awesomely talented, eh?
Well, I think so. I mean, you the critic, I think, and the whole sort of tvkev.co.uk.
It's okay. I'll take your compliment. Thank you very much.
it's a go-to place. Now, let's talk about this particular Top Trump scenario. I mean, clearly, comebacks, we like an underdog in Britain. We like to connect with all sorts of things. I was astounded to find the Ford Capri. Perhaps it's the days of watching The Professionals that, you know, is voted the car that we'd most like to see a comeback ahead of the Morris Minor.
Yeah, well, Top Trumps are bringing back their retro packs from 1999, which sold 80 million copies. So now the company have done this survey of 2,000 people across Britain to find out what are the other great comebacks that have happened or that we would like to happen. And as you say, extraordinarily, the motoring comeback that we'd love to see is the return of the Ford Capri. I'm not sure I agree, but that's what people want. Number two is the Morris Minor, and number three, rather bizarrely, is the DeLorean. Remember that one?
Well,
the one with the gull-winged car that didn't really work out?
It's the Back to the Future effect, and unless you can push it up to 80 miles an hour, who knows what could happen?
I hadn't even thought about that. Good point.
Now, in terms of which TV programme do you think has made the best comeback, Doctor Who is in pole position, Poldark follows, and then Cold Feet. Meanwhile, Only Fools and Horses, most people would like to see remade. I'm going to say Stingray. I think Gerry Anderson's Stingray, that would be my vote. But
yeah, where's Troy Tempest?
Exactly, precisely.
Exactly.
You know.
No, I love those puppet shows, absolutely. I'm surprised they don't feature either. But there's an interesting sort of disparity between programs, or for that matter bands, that have made comebacks and programs and bands that people would like to make a comeback. You were just playing ABBA then. That's the band that people would love to make a comeback. I'm not sure it would work out. They're all a bit old these days, but in their minds, they'd love to see it. They'd love to see Only Fools and Horses come back as well. And we all would, but if you think about it, only in its original form. We wouldn't particularly like the cast to come back and try to recreate the magic of something that was a long time ago, because I don't think it would work. But in our sentimentally and nostalgically, we'd love nothing more.
Is that at the heart of this, Kevin, that we actually stagger backwards into the future, looking longingly into the past through some kind of rose-tinted glasses, and say, oh, if only we could actually have Dirty Den from EastEnders making a comeback in our time, it would be so wonderful.
Well, of course he did in 2005, having been away from our screen since 1989, as you know, in the soap opera.
It could have been a dream. It could have been a dream. You know,
In soap operas, you know, being shot dead is by no means the end of your life.
No.
They always come. So Dan came back. So that was people wanted him to come back. So the BBC, bless their hearts, brought him back, and people loved it for another couple of years. People want all sorts of things to come back that remind them of happier days. Sometimes comebacks don't quite work out. For example, Channel 5 brought back Minder a few years ago. It didn't really work. ITV even brought back Crossroads. That didn't really work. But if you think about Doctor Who, Poldark, Cold Feet, have all returned absolutely triumphantly. You could only, in reality, bring back Only Fools and Horses, really with a new cast, which I suspect would rather upset people.
It's a kind of reinventionary packaging. Although arguably you could say that actually, characters like Sherlock Holmes, Tarzan, James Bond, they're kind of culturally embedded into the whole system, so that we kind of expect different incarnations of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Same deal with Doctor Who, the perfect reincarnation program.
Well, male or female, but that's another issue for another debate. But still,
yeah.
Now, in terms of
And as you said, this survey, 2,000 people were asked for top trumps and so on. Let's look at the sort of the slightly more challenging. I was relieved, I have to say, that shell suits, shoulder pads and velour track suits were actually all put down in, no, we don't want to see those fashion trends making a comeback. Those of us who were around in the 80s with the shell suit, it was never a good idea and it just didn't work.
Well, interestingly, you think about the fashion is, I think that Top Trumps did a good thing there. Don't ask people what fashion they miss, because people never miss fashion. They always look back and say, oh, my, you know, you look at an old picture of yourself 20 years ago, you go, what am I wearing, you know? So people always hate old fashions. However, you know, if you take shell suits, shoulder pads, velour, track suits, flares, bum bags, if somebody walked down the Milan catwalk, you know, in the next couple of months, wearing some of these things, I guarantee you, on the King's Road, you'd see the fashionable young things wearing them again. So fashion, like a lot of television, like a lot of music, is eminently recyclable. We just don't think it is at first glance.
The miniskirt, that should make a comeback. That's the thing.
Well, I'm up for that.
Yeah. Although, strange enough, I don't think I've got the legs for it these days, Kevin, but it's just a, just a lie. Would you just work on that basis?
Oh, I think you look great, Mark.
Oh, Kev, please, you know, let's just move, let's move on now.
You complimented me, I'm complimenting you.
There you are, exactly. Now, moving on, in terms of people who want to find out more details about Top Trumps, which, ironically, is kind of a bit of a retro phase in itself, really, actually having physical cards that you can actually sort of trump and do various other bits and pieces. No connection, obviously, with the President of the United States, need to be that quite clear. Top Trump's completely separate. You know, it's always that slight confusion. Is it just a case of getting a hold of the retro packs? Is there a website? Is there a place that you can go to actually access the full list of top three results for these comeback categories?
Yeah, there's a website. There are phone numbers. They're very easy to get hold of. $4.99 per pack. And the great thing about these is that you know, you can bring back a card game from the golden years when, as I say, it sold 80 million of these were sold in 1999 after they were revived. People will remember those, and these are obviously perfectly preserved in time. You know, packs of cards don't get old, if you see what I mean. Games in themselves don't get old.
And you don't have to worry about Wi-Fi connections not working either, because, you know, it's there.
They still seem fashionable as well, because you know, unlike a Ford Capri or whatever, they are they're timeless, really.
It's clearly a whole range of things. And Kevin, from your own point of view, was there anything that wasn't mentioned in the survey which you thought, actually, I really would have liked to have seen that come back?
I'd like to see Shoestring. Remember that?
Eddie Shoestring. Eddie Shoestring in a radio station. And in fact, I'd raise that and say not just Shoestring, but what about Midnight Caller, the United States equivalent?
That'd be good as well.
There we are.
Yeah, very good. Yes, yeah. I agree with that.
It's like playing Top Trumps on radio. Could be another theme. We can put it together.
Who's winning?
Lord above. It says an honourable draw. Kevin, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, sir?
Very much so. Interesting to talk to you.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the near future and keep us appraised of life, the universe, and various other Kevin O'Sullivan views?
Well, if you want to tune into Channel 5 tomorrow at 11 o'clock, I'll be giving my usual rundown of what's hot and what's not on the box.
And that's one of the things that makes Channel 5 worthwhile. It's amazing. Meanwhile, back with those brothers Gallagher, it's never going to happen. They're not going to get back together, but they were voted number two as opposed to ABBA in terms of band that we drew. I mean, actually, have you said that, Kevin? What odds would you say? Do you think Oasis will ever get back?
I reckon they will. I reckon they will. I mean, I don't think this is that they hate each other for publicity, but when they will get back together at some point, and their feud will be seen as the greatest publicity campaign of all time.
You've heard it, 9:26 on the 21st of September, Thursday, 2017, from Kevin O'Sullivan. Kevin, we salute you. Take care now.
Take care.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way somehow realize what you're not to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads that lead you there were winding, and all the lights that light the way are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how. I said maybe you're gonna be the one that saves me.
Issues relating to that. We're astounded to find 2/3 of women don't feel positive when they get dressed in front of a mirror. 35% of women change their outfits twice or more in the morning because they don't like how they look. And indeed, over half have claimed that super skinny models put them off when purchasing. To address some of the issues behind this and also kind of point us into the future happily and carefully and in all sorts of wonderful ways, we're delighted to welcome ace model extraordinaire. It's the amazingly talented Hayley Hasselhoff. How are you, Hayley?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Delighted to touch base with your good self. And, of course, this particular survey commissioned by Simply Be, that, again, the facts that we reveal that over half of women feel pressurised to look good. It's the second decade of the 21st century. Surely we should be beyond these kind of things.
I mean, it's absolutely astonishing, isn't it? When you get to see that, I think that's what's so amazing about Simply being able to commission this and really get down to the stats to prove a point that this really is happening in this day and age. You know, people keep talking about body image and body confidence and how it's still a struggle, but to be able to actually put it on paper and to see that people are really struggling with it, and we need to make a change, we need to make a movement with it, and being able to make a movement with it either through catwalks or through fashion is what we are trying to do and what brands are doing today.
Well, it makes perfect sense. Now, in the studio, we've also got Shaylee and Mackenzie. Shaylee, you were having a look at this research, and you made a couple of interesting points. First of all, that actually, does this apply to men as well? Shaylee, thoughts for yourself?
Yeah, so I work for Topshop currently, and we get this a lot from mums who have got young daughters, ages from like 14 to 18. They always comment on our mannequin sizes, which is a size 6, which would be a size 2 in America. And all that we do is apologise, because obviously we don't make the mannequins, but it sort of projects this image that as a young girl you have to look a certain way in a certain size. How does that affect America? How is it there? Is it pretty similar, or?
I think it's the same. I think that's the issue at hand, is that if you have more of a diverse range of models, if the brand carries the sizes that we can range to either on a mannequin or an advert, why wouldn't we show it? And I think that's kind of what brands are now striving to. Either you saw it in New York Fashion Week, like Christian Siriano, and you know, what he did was he said, okay, I have that vast variety of sizes. Why wouldn't I show that on the catwalk? And I think that's where the diversity is shifting. Simply Be's having the curve catwalk tonight, and what they're doing is they're not just showcasing, you know, one size in their plus range. They're showcasing a diverse range of sizes, and it's being able to show that you can see yourself in those clothes because your body type is being represented. When your body type isn't being represented and you're a young teenager looking forth into it, I think that it can negatively affect you and make you think that your body isn't the right body type in a social standpoint, and that it isn't beautiful the way that it is, when that's completely wrong.
Hayley, As somebody who's part of that awesome, I'm always saying it's the Hasselhoff royal family in many ways, but it's connected with that, and clearly from your Knight Rider through your Baywatch and so on. What tips would you actually give to women who do feel, you know, not up about their body image and they feel a little bit down? I mean, what is the best way forward? Because sometimes it can be very straightforward to say, oh, just, you know, don't worry about it, etc. But, you know, what from your own perspective would be the best advice to employ?
You know, there's so many ways to approach this, because I always say when you exude love into yourself, you exude love into others. But I also think that it's good to let girls know and women know that it's okay to have bad days, that you need to have bad days to get to your good days. So don't look down upon yourself if you don't feel confident at all moments in time. You know, what really helped me, I think, growing up into my figure was fashion. I know that might sound a little bit silly sometimes, but it really was. If I have a good outfit on, I know that I can focus more on the style representing me on that day than focusing on me having a bad body day per se. So, you know, find what speaks to you and what makes you feel confident, whether that be through fashion or, you know, putting on your favorite perfume or, you know, putting on a music that, you know, can shake you out of that headspace in that morning. You know, knowing that you are beautiful the way that you are today is only going to help you get to where you want to be tomorrow.
Now, you can obviously see the Curve catwalk on simplybe.co.uk. That's online and access details from that point of view. We mentioned at the start of the piece, was this something that applied to men as well? I mean, is that your experience, Hayley, that this is not just a female-only issue, or is it, or as males, do we just say, no, we have to just make do with what we've got, really?
No, I definitely think that this applies to men as well. I think that it's a disservice to the male fashion community, actually, and the Curve male community as well. You know, we're just now opening up a different... if you've seen, there's now more male Curve models that are kind of coming out and being able to be on the catwalks and being able to kind of be pushed forward. And when you speak to them, it's kind of that thing of that they've always wanted style as well, but they've only really had the ever, like, big and tall. But is every Curve guy always big and tall? Like, no, there's Curve guys in all different height ranges. So, you know, I think that where we are in this day and age is being able to accept everybody for who they are, and that fashion is acceptable for all, no matter what dress size you are or what diversity you can be. And I think that it's amazing to see that we're finally making change. Maybe we're not completely where we want to be just yet, but I think with brands like the High Street that we've kind of moved into that place, we're making those steps, and as long as we keep having this conversation about it, it's going to change slowly but surely.
You see, that, Hayley Hasselhoff, is why you should run to be President of the United States. You know, quite simply, the message is there. I mean, not that I have a vote, but I'd certainly encourage all our American correspondents to vote me from that point of view. Well, listen, not as scary as the... No, I won't even go there, because it's not a political line at all.
It's a whole different conversation.
Absolutely. In terms of the best place to go to, would you recommend simplybe.co.uk, Hayley?
Simplybe.co.uk is amazing, I am telling you. It is the thing with Simply Be is not only do they have amazing fashion forward and on trend pieces, but the message behind the brand is something that I am so unbelievably stand for. Their mantra is I am me, the unapologetic you. To know that there's a brand out there that is making on trend pieces but also has a message that supports the woman behind it is a beautiful thing. We all need that. We all need a little bit more of encouragement when we go into a store and when we walk out and if something doesn't fit us correctly. I think that it's a beautiful thing. Please watch the show tonight. You're going to be inspired whether you're plus or not. It's going to be a great kind of revolution to be able to see that many diversities on a catwalk and in a different shed of light. And it's also a different kind of show because it's a ready-to-wear, ready-to-buy. So it's not something where you have to wait a season and you know, kind of TikTok it until you can go online and get it. It's I see that girl wearing it. She looks amazing. She looks confident. I'm going to go and go buy it now and go rock it tomorrow. So it's an amazing show, and I'm so excited to be a part of it.
And culturally, would you say that we're pretty much the same as the United States in terms of this, as far as Britain's concerned, or is it a case of we're catching up? I mean, what's the overall view from your own perspective?
Well, you know, the past kind of 5 years, I've actually been more over here working around than America. But I would say High Street-wise, you guys have more availability for Curve than America.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Hayley, it's been an absolute delight and a joy, as we knew it would be. Touch your face with a good self.
You guys are so lovely. Thank you so much. And thank you for those stats, Top Shop.
Wow.
It's all great stuff. So the next critical question is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay for you?
You have been just amazing.
Oh, wow. And can we look forward to connecting with you again hopefully in the future,
please.
Then?
Yay!
Is it a case of hearts and flowers? Is it a case of, oh, a baby's face? Is it something that's even more tragic? What actually makes us cry? To begin to address this and talk about tear triggers, we're delighted to welcome ace psychologist, the fantastic Emma Kenny. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you. Better for that introduction.
That's fine. always true. And, of course, the equally wonderful Niall O'Kane. Good morning, Niall. How are you?
Shocked. I don't normally get introduced like that.
That's okay. So, tear triggers, this kind of thing. I mean, people sort of happy face, smiley face, sad face, and so on. Emma, what does the psychology? I mean, clearly our lacrimatory glands need to have exercise, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't clear out all the debris that's in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the research was conducted by Hiker Sunfresh, and the whole idea around that was to explore, you know, what are the triggers? What do activate tears for men and women, and is it different for men and women? And actually, the research was really interesting because it brought up some things that I didn't necessarily think it would have, such as, you know, men don't feel as embarrassed as women when they cry. But obviously, the normal triggers that you'd expect, women are very reactive to things like sad movies. Also, they cry when they're happy a great deal. So essentially, women are a lot more happy when they cry than men. So essentially, 38% admit to just crying for no good reason. It's as simple as that. Just, you know, whereas 22% of men say that. So there is a gender difference. But I think one of the things that came across really rich in the research was the fact that that actually we're okay with crying on the whole. We might feel a little bit embarrassed if it's in front of a colleague, particularly for women, but for the most of us, you know, we naturally expect that we're going to cry, and we feel good about crying most of the time.
We're probably both far too young to remember the 1990 World Cup and poor Gazza's tears of crying, but I think that was almost a watershed, no pun intended, for when it actually became okay for blokes to cry, perhaps, Niall. I mean, was that a sort of notion where you think, oh, it's too much, I can't take it anymore?
Well, I think people are actually more connecting with their emotions and actually being happy to show them. I mean, from my point of view, it's more about the health of the eyes that the tears are important, so that we're actually getting, the, as you so rightly said at the start, washing the eye out and keeping them nice and healthy.
Mm. I mean, Emma, ultimately, it is that sort of notion when we hear a great deal about eye drops and so on, but that importance of actually keeping eye health good is yeah, it, otherwise you'll cry even more if you, yeah. you sort of have troubles from that point of view. It becomes a vicious circle.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously eye health is really important, but for me, there's the catharsis level emotionally that's really important when it comes down to crying. So actually there's a lot of research and evidence that says that people who do cry and allow themselves to have that release feel just a great deal happier, because they've given themselves a sense of calm, they've processed the emotions, and they essentially feel more in balance. So it is really, really important. And obviously I think that people very often neglect eye health. I mean, genuinely, I think that we are quite restrictive at sometimes in the UK about letting ourselves be emotional, and I know a lot less about eye health than obviously my lovely colleague here, but I do know that crying is incredibly important. Obviously you can explain a lot more about that.
Yes, I mean, the thing that when people don't realise is that there's no blood vessels actually on the cornea, and you get the oxygen into the eye through the
really?
Tears. And so you talked earlier about when all atmospheres are smoke and dust and DIY, and obviously that goes into the eye, so you need the blink to actually get rid of that, so that you have a nice healthy eye and you don't get any friction and rubbing, and then you get the allergies and problems that are associated with dry eyes.
Yeah, we were actually talking before, because I have lots of animals, and I was saying that I actually use Hycosan because of the fact that I use it when I get my allergies, and I didn't realise it was because actually you need more of that fluid to displace the allergens, and now I completely understand. It's a really, really obvious thing when you think about it, but again, we often associate tears with emotion. We don't necessarily associate it with health of the eye, and I think that's a really important thing that I've learnt recently.
But also, you get tears of your, in all emotional tears, you've got your chemical tears, so when you're cutting an onion up, and then you've got, if you've got something in the eye, then it's that sort of flush of tears to get it out.
Wow.
But I think it's really, when you get a situation like that and the eye's not behaving that should, that's the time to ask a question as to, is there a problem I need to look into?
Right.
It's certainly, just listening to the two of you is almost bringing tears of joy to my face, in terms of just, it's fantastic. We need to have the Emma Kenny and Neil.
I know,
it's
so
fantastic.
Interesting though, I love it, because obviously I always talk about psychology, and very often I don't think we understand the workings physiologically of the body, and so I kind of find myself captivated when I'm listening to these conversations, because it all makes absolute sense now.
It could be the psych fizz show in every
that's
sense
it.
Of the word.
Let's pitch it.
But also it's important to bear in mind that when you start to listen to people and see how things work, it becomes logical.
Yeah.
And it's then starting to tune into that, to how can I improve things.
I mean, one of the things that the research kind of made me really think was, you know, I was so shocked that men said that, you know, 4 out of 10 men were saying, actually, I don't care if I cry in public. I think that's been a big change, probably in the last 25, 30 years. I think that men are feeling a lot more able to express themselves emotionally. And actually, it's us girls who are struggling a little bit more. You know, we say that we actually do feel quite a level of embarrassment. So I think it's really important that people do think about how they allow themselves to express some more positively with tears, because it's actually just exactly the same as hunger. It's a physical need that we need to use it and do it.
It's a perfect way into Tears for Fears. I couldn't resist it, but that's a different line entirely.
Great band.
Yeah, exactly. From Bath, of course. Emma Kenny and Niall O'Kane, where's the best place to actually go to for further information if people are sort of attracted to it? Let's find out more about eye health.
Well, obviously, it's to find an optometrist who will actually be able to do that. And one of the ways is looking at the website of www.tearclinic.com. And that will give the advice of where to go and some extra information on dry eyes.
As ever, it's been a sheer delight. Hopefully we can connect with your good selves in the very near future and continue the sort of fizz psychological scenarios, etc. Will you be kind enough to return?
Oh, absolutely.
Only if you can make your eyes water.
and so it goes. And clearly we could have actually played some more Tears for Fears, but we thought, no, we won't. We'll actually move to something completely different from that perspective. In a matter of moments, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Dawn Harper, of course, and indeed Martin J. Dockrell, who's the tobacco lead for Public Health England. You've possibly heard this on the news today, the notions that as we head towards Stoptober, there are record numbers who are quitting smoking as e-cigarettes actually trump tobacco. A lot of sort of trumps in terms of various other things. Cards, various other factors, obviously there's a message. But in terms of other facts for this story, we have actually got the highest ever quitting success rate on record in the first 6 months of 2017, which I suppose is actually good news from that point of view. We'll find out what Dawn Harper and indeed Martin Dockrell have actually got to say about that little story in Vitia. Research from the University College of London has actually coincided with the launch of Stoptober next week, so good news from that perspective. And that'll pretty much wrap up the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for today. Quick reminder that later on this evening, of course, we've got the Stone Tapes, which is coming through a truly awesome production with Sam Stone and David J. Howe and George Mann and a whole heap of fine, wonderful sort of folk involved with the Stone Tapes podcast as well from that point of view. So that's to come as far as Siren FM is concerned. Coming up in a few moments or so, we'll be speaking, as mentioned, to Dr. Dawn Harper and hopefully Martin J. Dockrell as well. Meanwhile, to take us around to that, well, we could have actually gone for another Tears for Fears song, but we thought, no, I think we'll get something which is sort of in the vague of the whole system and look to develop a range of things. And I'm thinking Chainsmokers, actually, which, with a little bit of luck, could actually get us into selfies, hashtags, and a whole heap of other things. In fact, to be specific, Chainsmokers and hashtag selfie.
Table, I kept on seeing him look at me while he's with that other girl. Do you think he was just doing that to make me jealous? Because he was totally texting me all night last night, and I don't know if it's a booty call or not. So, like, what do you think? Did you think that girl was pretty? How did that girl even get in here? Do you see her? She's so short, and that dress is so tacky. Who wears cheetah? It's not even summer. Why does the DJ keep on playing Summertime Sadness? After getting out of the bathroom, can we go smoke a cigarette? I really need one. But first, let me take a selfie. Pro or Valencia. I want to look tan. What should my caption be? I want it to be clever. How about living with my bitches, hashtag live. I only got 10 likes in the last 5 minutes. Do you think I should take it down? Let me take another selfie. My selfie. What a creep. Is that guy sleeping over there? Yeah, the one next to the girl with no shoes on? That's so ratchet. That girl is such a fake model. She definitely bought all her Instagram followers. Who goes out on Mondays? Okay, let's go take some shots. Oh no. Ugh, I feel like I'm gonna throw up. Oh wait, never mind. I'm fine. Let's go dance. There's no vodka at this table. Do you know anyone else here? Oh my god, Jason just texted me. Should I go home with him? I guess I'd take a good selfie.
It's all about speed. That's the important thing, really, as we move from hashtag selfie through a quick blast of the specials. And as promised, we actually have the fabulous Dr. Dawn Harper and indeed Martin J. Dockrell, Tobacco Leaf, Public Health England, with us now. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Excellent. Now, we've been talking about this the news stories, etc. Stoptober is approaching. This is a good news story, isn't it? Record numbers quitting smoking as e-cigarettes trump tobacco. I mean, Dawn, from your point of view, it's a case of, yes, punch the air. It's good stuff.
It really is. You're absolutely right. We have record numbers of people giving up, and we are really on the cusp, I think, of seeing a completely smoke-free generation. So we are working with Public Health England on their Stoptober campaign to kind of really let's get everybody, anybody out there who's smoking. Most smokers want to quit. We know it's not easy. Of course it's not easy. You know, smoking is a very addictive habit. But we also know, and we've got so much evidence to back this up, that if you try and quit with help, then you are much more likely to succeed. And the whole kind of Stoptober thing is saying, like, let's get a whole community out there. Let's get everybody working together. And you've got that kind of interaction. You've got a bit of camaraderie. You've got the support. And you can do it. People can do it.
That's right, Don. There's never been a better time to quit. We've seen in the last year, one in five people who've tried to quit have quit successfully. That's the highest success rates we've ever seen.
And these are not recidivists either. It's not a case of quit and then return to the whole system. These are people who effectively have stopped and stopped for good.
Absolutely.
Which is good. In terms of Public Health England, would you ultimately, Martin, like to have a situation where your role as Tobacco Leaf for Public Health England becomes redundant and actually people look back and say, tobacco? What would you even think of that for?
Oh, you know, I was doing the sums, and at the rate the smoking rates are falling, I don't think I'm going to make it to pension age. I'm going to have to find a new job. Yeah, it's fantastic. And people are stopping smoking, are switching to vaping, switching completely away from smoking. These people are my public health heroes. So, yeah, more power to you.
The interesting thing about vaping, of course, is sometimes I've often been tempted to actually say, are you on fire? Because you get that sort of wonderful vape that sort of comes through on the basis thing. Is that a safe option, Dawn? Because clearly there is, every so often there's a slight fear that, oh, well, if we switch to e-cigarettes, they can be just as bad in different ways.
Well, they're definitely not. I mean, they're 95% safer than the ordinary cigarette. And the interesting thing, you talk about that vape and the smoke that you're aware of, part of the whole smoking ban was worrying about secondhand smoke. Now, the minute you light a cigarette, the smoke is emitted from the end of the cigarette, and in fact, that's the really dangerous stuff. It's not even come through a filter and been inhaled and exhaled. It's full of all the toxins that are in a conventional cigarette. When you use an e-cigarette, you only produce the vape when you exhale, and it's got pharmaceutically pure nicotine, not all the tar and the 4,000 toxins that there are in a cigarette. So much safer for the individual and for everyone around them.
So it's a win-win situation, which is what we started off with, and it's a programme that's taken us from Penang University in Malaysia through Lawrence of Arabia, Richard Fitzwilliams, through Ian Lennox on Tyneside, Dr. Charlotte Faraday, Kevin O'Sullivan, and the importance of crying with Emma Kenny and Niall O'Kane, wrapping up perfectly after Hayley Hasselhoff with your good selves, Dr. Dawn Harper, and indeed Martin Dockrell. Two final questions. Well, actually three. First of all, where can people go to find out further details about Stoptober? Where online can people find out these lines? I mean, I know it's all over there, but people might still think, where can we go?
So simple, just type in Stoptober to any search engine and you will get all the information you need. And you know, we're planning to start the smoke-free 28 days, starts on the 1st of October. Part of quitting is planning ahead, you know, getting rid of all your smoking-related paraphernalia, your cigarettes, your lighters, whatever, planning that date and kind of working together as a community. So I would urge anybody who's thinking about it to go online, search Stoptober, get yourself prepared and join us all on the 1st of October.
And of course the other great thing is you'll find yourself financially better off as well, because it's not an inexpensive occupation really if you are actually addicted to nicotine. So a win-win.
£10 for a pack of cigarettes is an expensive addiction.
Yeah, precisely. Martin and Dawn, have you had a reasonably interesting and indeed smoke-free telephonic link with us this morning? Has it been okay for you guys?
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll connect again in the not too distant future. Well, we can actually, let's go for that aim. Let's maybe look for, I don't know, a couple of years' time. Stoptober is almost not needed because actually people have given up smoking. So we'll go with that. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you.
New York.
Billy Idol and Hot in the City, continuing his own sort of unique ways, which actually gives us a couple of seconds before we actually head up to the news. Maybe just enough time to actually squeeze in another musical device. Maybe not. Anyway, don't forget, you're listening to Siren FM. There's a whole heap of other great things coming through. Next week, we'll be back with the Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, so good news as far as that's actually concerned. We'll have the usual range of interesting facts as well. Moving on, don't forget you can also access the events guide on John Wenham's Events Diary, which comes on the sirenonline.co.uk webpage. In addition to that, you've got a whole heap of other good stuff coming through with respect to just siren goodness. So say no more, access the details if you're a student starting off as a fresher at the University of Lincoln. Enjoy, and remember, next week you'll be a fully fledged first year, and that freshers period will have actually gone completely, and you'll wonder where you're heading off to. Hey ho, that's life. News coming up in a matter of 90 seconds from now, and we'll catch up with you later on Siren FM.